Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Welcome to the Ladies of Liverpool podcast.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Ladies of Liverpool. With Leanne Campbell.
Proudly sponsored by Taskers. They've reinvented the way you shop for your home. Go and check out our brand new look Taskers on Long Lane. I don't know if I've said this at the start of a podcast before, but I'm going to say it now. We're about to hear about things that are going to be uncomfortable. You'll laugh, you'll smile, but it might just trigger you. And that's the sign of a great episode. I'm about to talk now to a lady who is an inspiration to me. And I only ever sit people in these golden seats who I think are going to educate you, motivate you, empower you, or put a smile on your face. And I think we're going to tick all of these boxes in different ways today. We're talking about a lady who took it upon herself, and she'll tell you why, to open up her own Scouse funeral parlour. She's going to be on the telly in the next couple of months. You're going to see her for yourself. But first, get accustomed with what she does. And the lady we call Hayley.
Hi.
Hayley. So I've known you a long time.
You are.
And I've watched this blossom and grow from something that came from a very personal place that we'll talk about later on. But just describe, Hayley, your business and what you do day to day.
So I'm a funeral director.
she owns a funeral parlour in Liverpool, but it's not like any other funeral parlour in the world, I'm going to say.
It's not.
What do you do that's different, Hayley?
We've been basically compared to a spa-like funeral home.
Yeah.
So we would care for lost loved ones that, you know, have passed away right across the city.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing them into our care and getting them ready for the families, basically, to be viewed in chapel. But we do it with a twist. So we're not, you know, your chapels with your dado rails, your crucifix, the red velvet curtains or a red carpet.
Yeah.
You know, our chapels are hand-painted, they're themed. And we also have themed coffins. So it's not a case of your mahogany with your gold handles. It's whatever personality that your lost loved one had, we can embrace that through the actual rest in peace for them in like the coffins and stuff like that.
So we're going to get straight into this now. I want to know, because I've seen the pictures. If you haven't, get on Instagram now. Butterflies rising is what you need to search, and you'll get lost for hours just scrolling through the pictures, and it'll open your eyes up to the opportunities you've got on your doorstep in Liverpool, or you can travel for, when it comes to giving the person that you've loved a lifetime the final send-off that they deserve and that personal stamp. It's that moment of, this is the last thing I'm going to buy for you.
Yeah.
So it's got to mean something to everybody, including the person that hopefully is looking down on us, which I like to believe. So what is the weirdest or most wonderful request, Hayley? Bet you've got loads of them.
Yeah, there's tons. I mean, you know, with regards to the way we are, you know, we see the walks of life come through our doors, and we've only been open just over 18 months now. So when we first opened, naturally, I went from the funeral industry.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, you've known me a long time.
Yeah, so you were makeup, you were cosmetics.
The injectables. And that was for 20 years of my career. But when we first opened, people would meet us, and when they'd meet me, they'd be like, oh, I know my mother's going to look all right, because look at you. You're done up, like, you know, you're ready to go out.
So I used to be like, oh. Yeah.
So we've had requests where, oh, can you dye my mum's hair? Can you put the bleach on her head for her? And I'm like, I can't dye it here, but have you got a root tint and I can do this? And but I never used to like to say no, so no. I try and do as much as I could for but them.
Do you ever have those thoughts? I don't know if anyone's thinking this now. Sometimes, like, you'll get up in the morning, you'll go, like my nan used to go, make sure you've got fresh knickers on in case you get run over.
Or matching underwear.
Yeah, you've got to make sure you don't have spiky armpits because this might be the day.
Yeah. And
this is how we'd have to bury you.
Yeah. So you've
got to be prepared. Yeah. And sometimes you'll get up and you'll go, oh, I've got blackheads on my nose or my roots need doing.
Yeah.
Imagine people glaring at me in a coffin like this.
Yeah.
You would hope that someone could make you look your best.
And, you know, it's not always possible because of different circumstances, but I always try and fulfil what the families want. So if they do want, like, the hair being dyed or whatever, like, obviously I've got a vibrant colour, so we've had people that have come into our care with colours like me, and I know I can do the roots because when my roots come through, if I've had a little bit of bleach put on them, I'm able to cover up. So there's things like that we can do, but, you know,
what would you do with Hayley? How would you dye a corpse?
I don't dye the hair, but I use, like, you know, like the crazy coloured eyes and stuff like that. So, like, the vibrant colours are easy.
Can you wash it out? Sorry, I'm trying to picture the...
So, in our care centre...
This isn't an easy thing. What I'm trying to point out is this isn't something anyone could do. This is something Hayley does.
Yeah.
How do you wash the dye out of...
Well, when someone comes into our care, we place them into what's called our care centre. And to anyone that's not familiar with the language, it's a mortuary. Mm-hmm. But I'm very conscious of how I explain things to families, because the last thing you want is knowing your mum's in a fridge in the back room.
Yeah.
So our care centre, from coming from an aesthetics background, you can basically eat your dinner off the floor in there. It's immaculate. It's sterile. You know, it's absolutely...
You can see these pictures on Instagram. It's like, it looks like the Bellagio Hotel when you walk in. It does.
Well, with the care centre, it's totally differently because obviously it has to be a sterile environment because from start to finish, when someone comes into our care, we have to care for that body in a hygienic way. And that's from washing them down, putting them into fresh linen, scrubbing the hair, cleaning the nails. We have to do things in the backs of the throats to stop a body from purging and things. And this is not all the things that families realise what goes on. And it's not something that I realised went on until I actually threw myself into the industry.
So you had to go and learn how to do all of this
with
the intention of creating something really special for people.
Yeah, and I went and got a job with a major corporate firm that was out of the way. I didn't do it in Liverpool. I went up to Newton Le Willows, and it was just as an arranger, you know, to learn like the paperwork side of things. Mm-hmm. And I dabbled in and out what's called the back of house, which is obviously the care centre mortuary element. And what I seen, it didn't prepare me knowing that I was going to open a funeral home. I was just like, wow. And I remember this one day taking a gent's clothes in the back and having to hang them up. But when I walked in, there was someone laid on the table naked with men and women walking around. And I was absolutely devastated. I can get upset talking about it now because straight away, it resonates to, was my mum laid out on a table with men and women walking around when she passed away? Because my dad and my mum had been together since they were 15, and I know no other fella had ever seen my mother.
No.
So to think, was she laid out on a table like this person was? And it broke me.
Yeah.
So with knowing that I was going to be opening butterflies, that element of the back of house for me was the most important. So going back to how do you do it, how do you wash, it's dignified. We've got unauthorised areas where people who are not authorised to come in can't go in.
Yeah.
Myself, my embalmer, Vicky and Neil are the only people that go into that back of house and are able, you know, to assist with looking after the lost loved one.
Yeah.
So like you're saying, how do you wash them? It's not like you're sitting up at a basin in the hairdressers because even though they'll have a curly blow by the time the family comes in, it's a very sterile environment on a tray that drains down into what's called a sink, into a sluice.
Okay.
So everything's elevated.
Yeah.
You know, we're in full PPE. It's not like I've got my apron on and I'm washing someone's hair and they're sitting up.
No.
But what I do make sure is important is I have the music on, because when I've done the arrangement with the family, I ask them, what music does your mother like? And if it's the Motown, it's great, because that's what my mum and dad did. So I'm there and we're talking to them like they are still alive, but I'm scrubbing their hair and I'm draining them and I'm making sure that they're immaculate.
Yeah.
But people don't see that side. So, you know, you are covered in bodily fluids. People don't see that.
Yeah.
We have a change of clothes when we go into the back, and then we have to change quickly before we come back into the front of the house. So there's all that element that nobody sees either.
So when you talk about moments like that, I get a lump in my throat because you think of your nearest and dearest.
Yeah.
And when you hand them over to somebody else, like, you know, the kids going to school, they start to go, you hand them over to a teacher and you're like, they don't know what I know about them.
No.
So to be able to sit with someone before you hand them over and say, this is everything you need to know. When she's getting her final blow dry, I want a music playing and this is what she loved.
And the thing in the, like, the arrangement that we do, I go, show me photos of your mum. And people go, what? And I go, I want to see a photo of her. I need to know who I'm bringing in, or I need to know who it is that I picked up last night, early hours.
And this is where your skills from your past all come into all this job in. Now.
And I think about when I did my mum's arrangement, and the funeral directors that we used were fantastic. I'm really good friends with them to this day.
Yeah.
But what I remember, the little personal touches that weren't said to me or asked about my mum.
Yeah.
It weren't there. So I've made sure that I have taught all my staff to, you know, to make sure that that arrangement, they have felt like the only person in the room, that that person we're caring for means the world to us just as much as them. And they do, Leanne.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I always say I'll make sure I look after them like they're one of my own.
I want to come back to your mum in a bit. I think we definitely need to talk about your mum and how she shaped all of
everything.
This. She's exactly what I think of when I look at your Instagram page, and it's beautiful. And I want to talk about that in a sec. But let's just go to the weirdest things and the most wonderful things, because we sort of strayed from it.
Yeah.
And I know that if someone asks you for something, you are going to go across the world to make it happen. You're going to go above and beyond.
Yeah.
So if someone comes to you with a request and you go, okay, I'm going to do it, what have been the toughest ones you've had, or the most interesting ones you've had?
I haven't had anything tough, because, like I say, when anyone comes in, if I say, like, on our nameplates for the funeral coffins, basically, we don't do traditional. So say, like, when my mum passed away, it had Colette McCorkran, age, died, date of birth, died, and then her age, that was it. I don't do that. I've turned it around. So it'll be Colette McCorkran, sunrise, the date she was born, sunset, the date she passed away, her age. And one of the one sayings that my mother always used to say was, yeah, if my aunt had balls, he'd be my uncle. Or, hey, bollocks, she'd be wearing your balls for earrings.
I've heard the saying.
Which, remember, she always used to say to Alfie. So when I'm in an arrangement, I go, look, we're going to talk about the nameplate now. We don't do things traditional here, as you know. And I always remember one of my families, Shelley, she won't remind me saying it, she sat with her sister, and her dad had dementia, he passed away in hospital. Big blue Everton coffin. She didn't know that we could do it. And she was like, he was a mad Evertonian, Haley, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, right, I've got this coffin for you. So I've never done one before. I said, but can I design it? She was like, what, you can do an Everton coffin? I was like, yeah. Pulls it out, and then I went, so this will be his nameplate. It'll be silver to go with his fittings. I said, and we'll have his name, blah, blah, blah. I said, but what did he used to say? She went, what do you mean? I said, did he ever say it? She went, oh, Becky, we can't put that on his coffin. I went, tell me what it is. She went, he used to say to us, fuck off. But that was probably the same. That was probably the first initial thing where I've gone, oh,
yeah.
But I thought, yes, we're doing it.
You actually,
and I've got it on the Instagram. And, it, you know, we'll talk slowly about going onto the telly, but that's part of our documentary that we've got. And it's just got a big fuck off across his nameplate. And it's things like that.
Yeah.
It breaks the ice as well. It makes people realise that you're normal.
It humanises them.
It does, because death is such a taboo subject.
Yeah.
And this is why I've tried to modernise it. Well, I have modernised it. I've made the parlour so that when you walk in, it smells gorgeous.
Mm.
It doesn't smell like death.
Yeah.
You walk in, you've got a 10-foot waterfall that's so tranquil, as if you've walked into a spa.
Yeah.
It's lit up with neon lights that any colour can change to, because if your mother was, you know, a lady who loved to wear pink or anything, I'd light it up pink, and everyone feels dead surreal when you walk in, and they're like, oh my God. And the first things first, you can hear them going, gonna fucking cost a fortune, listen, yeah. And I think you're going to get your eye wiped, because I've done my market research and doing my pricing and stuff. So I looked at the big competitors. I looked at the independents. I looked at such and such down the road, and I went bang in the middle.
Yeah. And so you are affordable.
Absolutely.
So they get a pleasant surprise. Okay. So they sat there in, like I said before, the Bellagio Hotel, and they're thinking, oh, there's no way we can afford a personalised coffin and engrave what we want on. And she can get her roots done. She'll have a curly blow. We can't afford all of that. And then they see that you
are. And they see that and they go, oh, Jimmy, look at that. That's not even that much. And I go, why, what? They go, well, we went to such and such down the road and offered this. And so people shop about as well.
Yeah.
It's not like the olden days anymore.
Yeah, well, you just went to the place where everyone you know went to,
you know,
that's close.
When my mother passed away, it was coins.
Yeah.
The big one on the drive, that's it, done. And we had a family friend, Ailey, don't go there. It's not them no more. Because this is another thing. Everyone thinks the big, you know, independents are still who they are. They're not. They've sold out to big corporate firms. But
such is life right now, isn't it? That's every industry, yeah.
So with us, and when we used and we went there, it was still beautiful. It was fine, but it was them personal touches. I didn't get a fingerprint. I didn't get a lock of hair. I've got nothing of her.
Yeah.
She's 6 foot down.
And is that what you do? You offer those services?
Oh, yeah.
As well?
Soon as someone comes in, clip of the hair's took off, the fingerprints are done, and someone goes, can I have a lock of my mum's hair? I go, I've already got it.
Oh.
And they go, what? I would go, what about the fingerprints? We've done digital copies. They've been sent to you by email. It's done automatically. So it's all them things. But going back to the weird and wonderful request, the fuck off on the coffin, a D&G leopard print coffin. We've done a Chanel coffin. We've done a Versace coffin. And these are all the things of personality. And people are just like, I can't believe this. You know, I've seen this online. And, you know, even the other week in around my time, you know, we had a 90-year-old woman who lived in the road next to us, and June, she was absolutely gorgeous when we picked her up. Eyelashes, big green eyeshadow, big black eyeliner, nails all lilac.
Well, that was how she looked on the day she died.
They made sure she was immaculate.
Full
was
glam.
Pristine.
Yeah.
Absolutely pristine, and loved the colour lilac, which is mine as well.
Yeah.
So when she came in, I was like, oh, she's just gorgeous. So I got her ready, got her into to rest in chapel. And her daughter, Max, she was just fab. She come in, Hayley, I just can't believe her. And I was like, she looks gorgeous. She went, do you know what, right? Do you know when we walk my mum through the village, will you do that? I went, of course we'll, because I'm very traditional on the day as well.
Yeah.
Top hat, tailcoat, and I'll page in front of the hair.
I wanted to get to this, so it's not just that you're there behind
the scenes. Oh, no, I fully
you do everything
well,
from
yeah,
welcoming the family in, organising the funeral.
And that's the
how
thing.
How they look.
Yeah.
Driving them to the final resting place. You do the whole thing.
Yeah,
and you've
got the continuity of the family. Because again, if you go to somewhere corporate, your loved one's brought in, but that person who takes your loved one on that final journey, you've never seen them before.
Never.
And I remember the same question I asked when I met the lady who cared for my mum, will it be you on the day? And it was no. And I was just like, okay.
You just don't want to leave them in the hands of someone who doesn't know them. It's
we
so
have
weird,
that,
isn't it?
But we have that continuity of butterflies. So with June, they were like, Hayley, she loved Barry White, and we're not wearing black. And she literally lived in the next road, and she went, can we dance her? And I went, what do you mean dance her? She went, I want to dance her. I went, all right, I'm dancing her right round the village. And she went, what? I went, just be ready outside for me, because there was no point taking her home. They could come in, and she was only in the next road and stuff like that. It was only this little small terrace house, you know, in West Derby and that. So we get to the top of the road, and the adrenaline with me was kicking, because I thought, this is going to go one way or another. I'm going to get absolutely bollocked as a funeral director for completely not being traditional and dancing my ass off through the village, or it's going to be like, wow, look at that, it's modernised.
So what do you mean dancing through the village?
So I got my phone, got the boombox, put the phone in my pocket and just made a playlist and just had all the Barry White on, all the Motown on, Dancing Queen, get to the top of the road, and because obviously the families know ahead of time of us coming in, they were outside waiting, but it was just an array of colours. There was not one bit of black, there was lilacs, there was pinks. Oh, Leanne, it was unreal.
Yeah.
And I remember getting down, but no one knew I was going to do what I was doing walking into. I just had the boombox on, it was Barry White, Mads, darling, So I've danced June down, I'm spinning around, and they're all going, oh my God!
And this is taking the coffin
to the car.
This
is the coffin to
oh, I've got goosebumps.
I have. And it gets to the house, and they were all there, sobbing Prosecco. We had all the Motown on. We opened up the back of the hearse. They all came over. Tears of joy, tears of laughter.
Yeah.
And they were like, Hayley. I'm shaking because I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm a funeral director.
Is this right? No one's done this before.
But I thought, why not? This woman was nearly 100. You know, she lived a life, a colourful life, so adored by her family.
Yeah.
Why couldn't I do that for her? So we spent some time outside the house, and like, do you want a Prosecco? And that's one thing I can't do right now, I said, but when the day's over, I'll definitely come and have a bevy with you. And again, that's not heard of, do you know what I mean? Joining the families, but you know, when you've got so close to a family in personal, and because she was in the next road and stuff, you know, we celebrated. But in the end, when we come out the road, we walked right through the village and we danced again, the whole family. There must have been about 50 of us just walking through West Derby Village, right past our parlour. Those who went on the funeral with us come out, and I've got this boombox just videos, and I haven't posted it because I just think, oh, but I will probably after this now.
Yeah.
The videos and stuff, there was all kinds, and then we were getting messages, oh my God, Hayley, I've just seen you dancing through the village and stuff, and I'm like, oh, was I okay? Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's absolutely amazing.
The family are happy, that's all that matters.
And then we get to the crematorium. And the family followed us in their own cars because, again, there was that many of them.
Yeah.
So as we get pulls up to Springwood, I just got the speaker and I went and put the speaker out the window. Vahisha went, "What, you can't do that?" I went, "Watch me." So I just put the speaker out and then everyone just got out the cars and they were all like that. Everyone was dancing. Gets to the creme, and I don't know if you've ever been to funerals, they're a bit like a conveyor belt.
Yeah, they are, yeah, yeah.
So as we...
And if you miss your slot...
Oh, you're done. Yeah. So he pulls up again and I went, "Right, come on, last dancing, girls." So dancing queen then. So I've pulled up again, boombox out, put the funeral before us standing. You can just see all the funeral directors going,
"What's happening here? What's..."
And I was just like, "Dancing queen." So we danced around it.
That was her moment.
That was it. And, you know, you're never going to get a time like me, Neil and Vicky in the parlour. We say, when you get married, Leanne, you've got years to plan that. Yeah. You're planning a funeral. You get one chance and one chance only. So we have to do everything in like 1 to 2 weeks to perfect that send off. We don't get a second chance.
I always say when I'm at a funeral, and I've been to many in my life, sadly, and a lot of young people as well, and you see people do it so differently.
Yeah.
And what's right for them in that moment is their business, and that's how they do it. And you respect any type of funeral and however it goes because that's right for them. But you do look around, no matter what the funeral's like or how it's going on, you think the saddest part is that person's not here to see who loved them,
but they
can hear the memories and hear the stories. And it just,
I always say, I'd love to watch my own funeral.
Yeah,
no, I would. And this is another thing now, I don't know if you've seen it, they're called funerals now. So you know when people know that they're about to pass away, they're on end-of-life care, they're doing things called funerals.
Never heard of a funeral.
Well, we've just had a girl come in.
Go on.
And plan her own funeral. She's a little bit older than me, Laura. And she's come in and basically spoke with Neil. I was on holiday, unfortunately, and she's like, "Right, I'm coming in. This is what I want to happen. I'll be back in to see Hayley, blah, blah, blah. But I'm going to do a party before I die." She's got a little boy today. And Neil was like, "Right, okay." And Neil loves it. Neil thinks it's like taking hold of your own destiny.
Yes.
Whereas it's hard for me because I think we're getting more and more popular now with our business, Lee.
Yeah.
And when we're meeting people more and more, and it's hard because I'm actually now getting a relationship with these people.
Yeah.
We're talking, we're going through plans.
Yeah.
And this is another funeral that we did as well a couple of weeks ago. We were all doing Proud Mary and Anfield Creme. So, you know, it's things like this.
Yeah.
We went out, we've met her. And she's like,
she's having a funeral before she dies.
Yeah, and there was actually a
program.
Yeah, it's called the funeral. So, you know, I put the fun in funeral. You know, it's things like this that, you know, modernising.
This is something we've all thought about. That.
Yeah.
So she gets to hear how much everyone loves her.
Yeah.
And any speeches are being made, she gets to hear them. And that's good for the people who are losing the person because they know they've heard everything.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer in no regrets.
I am.
If someone passes away and you've got no regrets,
definitely.
You've smashed it.
Yeah.
To live with regrets after losing someone without that chance to fix it is heartbreaking to me.
Yeah.
So this
funeral
is unbelievable, but perfect.
Yeah, and this, it's getting more and more popular. Yeah. You know, people are coming in, they're seeing our social media presence. And when we started, all I rely on is social media and word of mouth. I still haven't got a website. I haven't had them to sit down and do one. So every funeral, every person that's come through our door has been because of recommendation on how we've cared for the loved one or the social media presence. And the amount of repeat families we've had come back in such short space of time as well, it's incredible because obviously they trust us. Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But I know us as a team have done a fantastic job.
You've changed their life and you can't come back from that then, can you?
No.
You can't walk away from what you've experienced, even as an onlooker.
Yeah.
If that was somebody else who maybe you wasn't so close to, but you've watched this family go through it and you come to one of those funerals, you're going to want the best for your own, aren't you? You're going to want that personal touch. So there's the fun side of, you know, of the happiness for the families and giving people what they want and their final wishes, even when they're still alive. The hard side is, and I've seen this on your Instagram recently, is as a mum to a young child, you deal with a lot of children passing away and families coming in trying to give the final send off to their babies and their children under different circumstances. How do you cope with that, Hayley?
Well, at the beginning, as you know, 20 years in beauty and completely flip side, reverse, you know, it wasn't so much children of my daughter's age. It was more stillborn babies and miscarriages and never prepared me for that either. But as time's gone on, the emotions I can deal with, because I've got to be strong for that family.
Yes.
So dealing with you know, the babies and stillborns, I can manage that because I can take that pain from the family being able to do it.
Yeah.
But we recently done a funeral for a 9-year-old girl that had a very strong social media presence with the family, and her illness, her complex need illness, you know, deteriorated quite rapidly. And a year before, I'm getting choked now, a year before she passed away, and her family came in to see me and actually made an arrangement, not knowing when she was going to pass away.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, oh my God, like, how can you sit here and talk about your child who's still alive? Yeah.
And you're thinking of your own child in the situation, and I'm thinking, what if I was this mother?
This little girl was running around normal as a baby growing up, and over time her health deteriorated. I was thinking, this could happen to Tilly at any point. It could happen to any one of my niece or nephews. Mm. And, you know, it was hard. And, you know, we do a lot of children's funerals in terms of the babies, but this particular girl was the first, like, child, like, you know, who had been to school and things like that, you know, a disability school and stuff like that, and had key workers. And when she passed away and came into our care, it was a different level. It hit every single one of us, especially Vicky. She's got four girls. She's a single mum.
Yeah.
You know, Neil's tough. He's been in it 22 years, but it broke him as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, no one sees what we have to do behind the scenes for that. So when I knew I was getting this little girl in, it wasn't a case of I knew what the family had picked casket-wise the year before, but we revisited everything and changed everything. It was a case, right, she's passed away. Now I'm not ordering a coffin for her to go into it straight away. I need to turn this room into a bedroom. So I said to Neil and Vicky, I need to turn the chapel into a bedroom. And they were like, what are you going to do? I went, I'll have to get a bed. And they were like, what do you mean a bed? And I was like, I'm not putting a baby in a coffin. I'm not putting a little girl in a coffin for mum and dad to come in. I said, you know, she was, you know, severely disabled. They were used to her, you know, being in a bed. I said, but I just need to keep that continuity. And
is that because as a mum you thought, imagine walking into a room and seeing your child in a coffin.
Yeah.
So as a mum, you've made this decision of, I can't put these parents through this. We've got to do it differently.
Even the same with babies as well. Like, they don't go into a little tiny, you know, shoebox-sized coffin. They're in a Moses basket. Everything's transitioned slowly. And I had to do this with this little girl. So got a bed ordered, got all the princess bedding because she loved the princesses, Moana, everything.
Mm.
Got, like, you know, all, like, you know, when you turn the light on and it makes the room all, like, starlighty.
Yeah.
I got all the butterfly fairy lights for her, and I just set it all up as if it was a bedroom that she was walking into. And I'd sent the mum and the dad and the stepmum, you know, a video of the room, and said, this is where she's going to be coming.
Again, preparing them for that moment.
But it was also when she passed away as well. You give the family options. So when someone passes away, a private ambulance turns up and your loved one's taken and you're putting in the back of a tranny van, basically. How am I telling a mum and a dad I'm taking the baby and putting them in a tranny van? So I have to give them options. And I said, look, you know, would you like to bring, you know, your daughter in our private car instead on your knee? And they were like, what do you mean? I was like, do you want to come with her on your knee in the back of one?
You could do that.
Yeah, you can. And they were like, no, look, we'll spend as much time as we can with her. And even like then, when the back of the van came, you know, Neil and Vicky, they put a mattress in it for her instead, with the princess bed and an old fairy light. So it weren't like, although it was the back of the van still, it was still comfortable for a little girl to go into, or a child to go into, and the family chose that. But then we had another little girl who passed away again with complex needs, and mum and stepdad did bring her in on the knee back of the car. Yeah. So these are all the options that no one sees goes behind.
You're not getting that anywhere else, are you? I've never heard of that.
No.
And I've never even thought of it.
No.
The thought of being able to hold your child to the very last. Oh, gosh.
Exactly. It's bad. And then, you know, when she's then coming to our care, I've then got to go and pop her into the care centre. And in your mind, you're thinking, where's my little baby? Where's she resting? Is there someone with her? And that's the thing I always say, because if we have got older people in our care, like mums and dads or nans and granddads, I'll go, look, she's not on her own. You know, we've got Nanny Annie in there. And, you know, I let them know. And we don't let them know who's there, but it's like, she's not on her own.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And then it's the transition then of, like, getting them in and, right, the coffin's been ordered now. Would you like to see pictures of her face? Yeah, go on. So I'll send them the pictures and it's like, wow. And then it's like, right, the coffin's being delivered. Would you like me to bring it out for you to see? And it's all about these stages, but they don't know you're doing that, but it has to be done. And then it's like, right, okay, you know, your child's condition getting choked, your child's conditions, you know, becoming a lot more delicate, because you can see the change in children a lot more quickly, yeah. And it's not like adults. And we have embalmed the children, that, you know, the two children, two little girls that did pass, and no other funeral directors would do that. They would just basically care for them, let the deterioration go, because it's not heard of children being embalmed. But
why is that?
Because they're so small and delicate, the arteries are so tiny, but it's, in my opinion, laziness.
Yeah.
And I know that from my embalmer, because not me being my embalmer's lazy, he has the tools, he's paid out for the tools, or I've paid out for the tools,
yeah,
to be able to give care treatment to everybody. So it's the tiny little tools that have to go into the arteries, because again, this is what no one sees, go behind the scenes.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So she was laid to rest in the bed, and we transitioned the family then into the coffin, into the casket. And then we even give them the option, would you like to pop the lid on as well? And it's like, no, I'm done.
That's
like
the hardest bit, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and some family are like, no, I want to see, you know, the whole journey yeah. too. So everyone's completely different. Yeah. And because we did that one funeral, we've had an influx of families finding us, which is harder and harder. So our mental health the last few months has actually been on the floor.
It's tough, because knowing you and loving you as I do, and I know how emotional you are, or that's not the right word, it's empathic,
yeah,
you feel everything for everyone, you're such a good person.
But people meet me and think, oh, she said loud and wiry, but once you know me as a person, yeah, you know I'm completely
totally
opposite.
Totally the opposite. I think you've gone above and beyond, as only Hayley would do, to make this important moment something that the family walk away with no regrets, and you've done everything you can, and that, you know, you deserve a medal for that in my eyes. I'm like, as a mum, to have done that and thought of everything, because you want to take your brain away, you don't want to think, what if this was me, because it's tearful, we both just started crying doing it for a second. If that's your job full time, you want to, as people do, separate yourself, become isolated from it, emotionally detached from it, where you don't. Yes, you've created what needed to be done in that day, but people are going to speak about it. Mm. So more and more people are going to want you to do that if the worst thing happens to them as a parent.
And this is
so then you're getting that day in and day out.
So what I've now done is I've got a counsellor in, because we need it.
Yeah.
I need it. We know I need it. Well, for staff, we all need it collectively. We're a team of four.
Yeah.
We're not a big corporate firm. We're not a big, large, independent with multiple branches across the city. Mm. There's four of us.
Yeah.
Four of us that do the work between us all. It's not one person. It's not me dancing in front of the coffins, or, you know, paging people out. It's not Vicky sitting doing the paperwork and an arrangement. It's not Neil, you know, directing and dressing bodies in the back. It's literally, when someone comes in, it's the team of us working together. Mm. And that's just not 9 to 5 either. Yeah. This is 24/7, 365 days a year. Mm. And that's what people forget.
I've just watched it today, and literally until we turn the mics on, you answer messages, it's voice notes, it's about flowers, it's about the rain, constant, and she's got 45 minutes now, and that phone will go back on, you'll have 60, 12 missed calls and messages, and that's when you're on your holidays, that's when you're in bed of a night. That's,
you've seen it when we were on holiday.
Exactly, yeah.
And it doesn't stop, and, you know, with regards to it, like, I try not to give my personal number out, but I get too attached, and I'm like, look, if you need anything, this is my number. I've got to, and, you know, if one thing slips, that's everything destroyed. Yeah. And I only get one chance, our team only get one chance to do that last thing for their loved one. And, you know, it's sometimes the phone will go in midnight or early hours, and it's a family going, hey, I've just forgot to ask you this. And I'm like, oh, you know, woke up, might be on call anyway, but you're asleep, but you're not asleep.
Yeah.
And this is the thing people don't realise as well. It's not just getting someone ready. It's an operation of where it never, ever stops. And what you've also got to remember is you've got to look after that family like you're not looking after somebody else's.
Yeah.
You know, I make sure that when I'm looking after one family, they feel like they're the only family that I've got.
Yeah.
But what people don't realise either is we're not robots. Mm-hmm. We feel emotions and, you know, we have difficult families, you know. There's been altercations with families, and you have to be that middleman, that medium that basically says, look, it isn't happening on my watch, and I've done it. I've been punched on a funeral a couple of weeks ago.
because standing in between, trying to say this isn't about personal difference, this isn't about...
Yeah.
Because all emotions come up, don't they, between families and when they lose someone.
You know, Neil was like, stop the funeral now. I was like, no. I went and buried his wife a couple of months ago. I met him as a gentleman. He was a gentleman.
Yeah.
I want to fulfil this. And then it kicked off again outside the Kremlin. I lost my rag finally. Mm. And I was just like, stop. Mm. I said, if you don't pack this in now, you know, Mr. Such and Such will be cremated without a service. Do you think he deserves that? And he's like, well, sorry. I went, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, it's things like that where if it was anyone else, it's a job to them, they'd walk away.
Yeah.
You know, this is my business, this is my firm, this is my team. And I said, no, I'm continuing on with it.
Yeah, you've got a job to do here and you're doing it.
And I'm doing it. And sometimes I say that to families as well.
Because they're going to turn around in months from that moment and go,
yeah.
What have we done? Yeah. What did we do?
Yeah.
And it comes from emotion. Everything comes from fear, I think. Yeah. Fear or happiness. They're your two reasons for doing anything, aren't they? And I think in that situation, when emotion gets in the way, that's a massive regret for them, which we spoke about before.
Yeah.
And you don't want to leave them with regrets.
No.
But then that weight and that pressure and that stress must be unbelievable for you. But I did say we get to this point and we're going to do this for your wonderful mother.
Yeah.
So Colette... one of the best powerhouse women I've ever come in contact with. This is a woman, Hayley's mum, who could make you feel 10 foot tall when you were rock bottom with just a sentence, just a look. She was wonderful. And she was lucky enough to be yours. And you lost her suddenly. And you've mentioned briefly of how that's how your life completely turned around.
Yeah, so... cancer, where to start with it, you know, life and soul of a party, wasn't she? Gorgeous.
Stunning.
Never had a bad word to say about no one. And, you know, like you said, she was just took from us far, far too soon and unexpectedly, to be honest, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, my mum, she got diagnosed with cancer 25th of May 2019, and that was all just because of a little cough.
Mm-hmm.
And she was losing the weight drastically, but she had a couple of family issues, you know, with a Down syndrome, but they're trying to be brought back up to Liverpool, you know, to be homed and stuff in residential care because he was getting too much for her older brother. He was becoming elderly and whatnot down in Chorley.
So were you putting it down to stress? She's losing weight and stress. She can't get well because she's stressed. She's got this cough, won't go away because she's stressed.
Yeah. And our Lauren, she was like, Hayley, there's something wrong with me mum. The weight's fallen off, but our Lauren was always with me mum. I was always working. I was in and out. I see my mum, spoke to her every single day, as you know. But Lauren was with her and she was like, Hayley, there's just something not right with her. So I was like, right, okay. And then this one day she rang me and I thought, I went, have you been crying? And she went, no, why, what? I went, oh, what's up? Your voice doesn't sound. I said, nothing bleeding wrong with this bleeding cough. And I was like, right, okay. So I phoned Lauren back and I went, no, you're right. I said, I'm going to phone the doctors now. She went, she went bleeding, phone them. I went, oh, I'll phone them. Phone the doctors, told them the symptoms. And they were like, we haven't got an appointment for at least 3 weeks. I went, no, lad. I said, something's not right. I said, I need it in now. He went, right, let me phone the doctor and I'll phone your mum to see when she's free.
And this is all pre-COVID, isn't
it? All pre-COVID.
When you could get a doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
Imagine now.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, puts the phone down 10 minutes later. Hey, have you just ran them doctors on me? My mother went. I went, yeah, why? You know what she was like. I went, well, what's the matter? She went, well, I've got to go in tomorrow. I went, well, that's good, because he told me 3 weeks. I said, so at least you're in.
Yeah.
She went, I'd wish you'd all bleeding, mind your own bleeding business. I went, well, if there's nothing the matter, you'll go in. She went, all right then.
Because she was the caregiver. Yeah. She looked after everyone.
And, you know, if someone was sick, she'd turn up with a pan of scouse or a pan of soup for them. You know, that was the nature of my mother. She never had a bad bone in her body. So anyway, she goes into the doctors, and I'll never forget this. I was sitting in Liverpool one, having some food with our baby, because she used to go to school in town.
Mm.
She rang me, she went, where are you, girl? I thought, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
I went, why, what's the matter? She went, just come out the doctors. And I went, oh, mother, I forgot, I said I'd come with you, because our Lauren had Googled it, and Lauren's going, she's got cancer. I was like, Lauren, shut up.
Yeah.
So I went, well, what have they said? She went, well, they've referred me on a two-week rule for throat cancer. I went, you what? I went, I'll be home now. So I was like, that one's right. Oh, my God. I went, come on, babe, we've got to finish this. She went, well, I went, Nanny's not well, we've got to go home.
Yeah.
So apparently she'd said to the doctor, look, lad, I'm away on holiday in 2 weeks. He was like, well, go away, enjoy your holiday, and the appointment will be there when you come back. So she must have phoned Alfie. And you know, Alfie, everything's done. Yes, he wants everything done yesterday.
I'm a bit like that. I've got no patience with anything.
So
the wait is worse for me. That, just tell me.
Alfie's the same. Mm. So I think she must have phoned my dad and she said she'd no longer got through the front door. My dad went, you're not waiting 2 weeks. You're in Spire next week or in 2 days or whatever. She went, right, okay then. So I come home and she showed me the letter and you haven't got through cancer. It's a 2 week referral rule based on your symptoms, you know, the way if you've ever had a scare.
Yeah. So if you get a lump in your breast.
Yes.
And you've got to be seen within 2 weeks. Yeah.
So she was referred, she went to the Spire and the doctor was very calm with her, she said. And it was, just go and enjoy your holidays, Colette. You know, we put the camera down your throat. Go and enjoy yourself. Take your time. But, you know, we'll look after it. May just be a little bit of paralysis of your vocal cords because you've had a cold, because they'd been away to Memphis, you know, for my dad's 60th. I mean, dad's 60th it was. So she's like, all right, lad, no worries, blah, blah, blah. So she goes away, comes back, and I'll never forget it. 25th of May, Saturday it was. My phone rings, it was 10 o'clock. She put the phone down. Thought, oh, why she put the phone down? I thought, she thinks I'm in work, Malinky. So I phoned her back, she buttoned me. Phoned her back again, buttoned me. So I text her, answered the phone. So she picked up and she went, hiya, girl. And I just,
no way.
I went, what's up? She went, where are you? And I went, I'm in Man. She went, who are you with? I went, where have you been? I said, you've been inspired, haven't you? And I went, what's the matter? She went, where are you? I said, I just told you. She said, I went, you've got cancer, haven't you? She went, yeah, in my lung. Well, I just lost the plot, smashed the whole house up.
Mm.
I don't even sleep in any when I'm in bed. Yeah. I think I put a T-shirt on the side. I was like a banshee. She could hear me. Got in the car, not on, just a T-shirt. Walked in the living room and she was like, girl, what's up? Go and put some clothes on. I was like, I need to know.
He's just completely lost it.
Just lost it. And I thought, right, stay stronger. Just looked at me dad. He was like a bag of shite. Mm. It was like...
Yeah.
A deer in a headlight, and she was the same. She was Greg.
And what they said at this point, they said that we can do surgery.
No, we knew not, and it was just a 6x4 tumour in a lung, and that was it. We didn't know if it metastasized around the body, you know, with the
bowels. Yeah, to go and see if it's gone anywhere else.
So, you know, Alfie again on the internet straight away, and that night started the alternative therapies, the THC, the CBD. We all got bladdered, and, you know, I just said to her, we'll get through this, kid. And then, because I knew what it was then, didn't know what type of cancer it was, but it was.
Yeah.
And we started on all the alternative therapies, and then it was like, right, I'm coming to every appointment with you.
Yeah.
No, you've got where? I was like, do you think I'm letting the wind blow on you now? Didn't anyway. You know what? We were like as a family. She was my best mate. Used to put my phone on the side on Do Not Disturb and record the whole appointments.
Yeah.
And then the first time I went with her, when they said it was stage 4, I went, well, what's stage 5? They went, no, there is no stage 5. It has progressed. And I went, well, where? So they'd give her a full body scan. And I went, go on, you go out now. I'll talk to them, because Alfie just couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
And they were like, your mum's prognosis isn't good. I went, you can't tell her that. I said, because she will lose her head.
Yeah.
I said, what do we need to do? And they were talking about tumour markers and everything like that. And I went, well, what's her expectancy? And they went, like, well, it's metastasized around her body. I went, what do you mean? They were like, she's riddled in it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what?
Yeah.
It's in her shoulders, in her hips. And they were like, 6 to 9 months. And I was just like, what? So I would come out the room sobbing. She went, what's up, girl? And I was just like, nothing. We'll get through this. And we paid private. We'd done everything for her. And then the cancer, when we paid private, was nearly gone. We'd shrunk the tumour by half. The doctor had said we weren't able to do that. And then she went out shopping around the Christmas time in a little jacket and caught the flu and then got hospitalised. My birthday was the 4th. My dad was the 8th, got hospitalised the 9th of December. Never come out and passed away on the 28th of December.
And this was around COVID time, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I think the start of it had came.
I remember thinking, oh no, she's caught COVID.
Yeah, well, I think it was, because when I look back now, I don't know if you've ever been to chicken barbecue in Broadway.
No.
Like, it's all like greasy bacon, greasy sausages, but you get like all your chopped pork, you know, a proper little...
We've been there for years.
Yeah,
what it's called?
Next to the chippy.
Yeah, with your char siu. We used to get char siu to go on noodles every Saturday.
Yeah, so with it, she used to go out, and I used to have my mum on a strict diet, but she went out with our lord and they'd sneak a bacon butty.
Yeah.
And this time she was going, lord, and I can't smell or taste, not in my head banging. And our lord was like, what do you mean? And this bacon had been sitting in a tray of bacon, salty, fatty, 4 sachets of bacon on it, you put on it. And, you know, the morning that she got took into hospital, I'd done the school run and I'd come back and we'd been out for my dad's birthday the night before and she was going, girl, I don't feel right. I can't taste nothing in my head and all that.
Yeah.
And when I come back, the window had flung open. And when I sat down, she went, all right, girl, have you done the school run? She was like, dad in the bed. And I went, mum, are you shaking? She went, we're going to Clatterbridge now. And I was like, yeah, I know we are. And when I done a temperature, it was 42. Oh, and the next thing, she just went, and she was like having a fit in front. We couldn't breathe. We had ambulance. My dad had gone to the shop to get the papers because it was that hour. And when he came back, he come up the stairs and he just heard me. I went, dad, get out the room.
Yeah.
I had the ambulance on the phone down my top trying to get it ready. And then they said something. I was like, well, now's the time if you've got a defibrillator to get it ready. And I was like,
oh, no.
And she just burst, girl, calm down. She's trying to calm me down. Yeah. Dad, get out the room.
Yeah.
Because I thought if she goes now.
Trying to protect everyone, aren't you?
Yeah, and that's the way it is the whole time. With me mum, I didn't let anyone know. And before she'd go in for checkup appointments, I'd have the doctor on the phone to me before we'd go in because if it got worse, I couldn't tell her it got worse. Yeah. But everything was going in the right direction. Like, it was the flu. She went out shopping. She was immunocompromised. And we didn't know about wrapping her up in this cotton wool at this point, but away from people with the slight cold. And that's what took her. And when she got took into hospital, it became hospital-acquired pneumonia. And the day that we got called up over there, I'll never forget it. My dad, he stayed with her Christmas Eve because I had to go. No, I stayed with her Christmas Eve and my dad went home with our baby. And he'd come in at like 5 o'clock in the morning and go on, kid, get home to the baby. She's going to be up soon. She still believes in Father Christmas.
Yeah.
So I just tapped her and I went, I'll be back in a bit. She went, where are you going? I went, I've got to open the presents with the kids. So she was like, okay. And I got home to her house. Everyone was in her house and we were all just like, eyes like liver. The kids are all not knowing what's going on. Yeah. Your head's everywhere. She wrapped all our Christmas presents for us and the kids have opened everything and we're on FaceTime to her. She's on the intensive care oxygen. I went, right, we're all going up the hospital now. And Lauren was like, we're in our pyjamas. I went, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
So we've all marched in the ward and everyone, she's sobbing, absolutely sobbing. And our baby had to go to her dad and I said to her dad, can I have an hour with my mum? I said, she's not going to make it. He was like, no, get the baby out now. So our baby never seen my mum that time ever again and it just broke me and I sat with her then. And then I went home that night, or was it the 26th I went home, and I got a call, Hayley, it's time to come up. My auntie Veronica was sitting with her, it's time. And we get in there, so everyone bounces in, and here she is full of beans.
They say you get that last little burst of energy.
She goes to our Ryan, my brother-in-law, do us a favour, lad, go down them stairs, get us a bacon butty, make sure they put brown sauce on it this time. And our Elliot's sitting next to me, my brother, and I just went, and Elliot went, I went, right, okay. So the next thing, our Jackie's there, my auntie, she comes in. Why is our Jackie here? She had ringworm last week, wasn't allowed in to see me. She went, you all think I'm bleeding soft. You have been called up for me, haven't you? I'm on my last right. And I went, piss off. I went, you think you're going anywhere? And it was that night, it went into early hours and then she made it through and then the 27th came and then it went into the early hours of the 28th and I just remember holding her. She kept looking at me. I'm going to her, close your eyes.
Yeah.
She's going, looking at me, kept closing her eyes and breathing. And I just said to my mum, please. I said, I'll look after everyone. But my dad will always stick in my mind because he walked out on the 27th and went, see you tomorrow, kids. Because he knew she was going.
Yeah.
And she went, all right, lad. But you know, when you watch two eyes, the eyes
they off, knew.
And she was sobbing and he was sobbing and he never seen it again. And then when he came in and she passed away, I'll never forget it. And this is where the strength came from with me and everything. He walked around the bed and he walked with his arms behind my back, Dad. And he looked at her and he went, you dickhead. What did you wear that coat for? Because she was just a thin
jacket. Put it down onto this thin jacket.
This thin jacket catching the flu. And he went, right, everyone, out the room. She takes over now. This is a woman's job. Out. And I just went, okay. And that was it. It was autopilot.
I think when you hear that story in full, all the pieces come together for what you're doing now. That's the only explanation that anyone needs to hear.
Yeah. And so she passed in my arms. Our Lauren punched her to try and wake her up and she come back. I was like, Lauren,
no.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Just leave her, please leave.
Yeah.
So she fell asleep. And then I said to the nurses, I went, get everything off her now. Get this off her, get this off her. And I went, I want to wash her. So we washed her, we put fresh jammies on her. And then, I'm sorry I never sat with her, because what I know now, I didn't know I could, and I just left.
Yeah.
And it still haunts me to this day.
I need somebody like what you're doing to talk you through it and give you the options. That's what you keep stressing.
It didn't
happen. People need to know. You need to tell people what they can do and what they can't do, because nobody talks about it.
No, and it didn't happen. And I think how long was she left on that hospital ward for? Because I know. Now I know. We do removals, you know, from them types of places. Yeah. And you just think, wow. And then when anyone passes away now, that's why I say, look, I'll treat them like my own. So no matter what hour of the morning we bring someone in, they are washed, they are changed, they are put in fresh linen. The care is dignified from start to finish.
Yeah.
And the night before a funeral, you know, very traditional Catholic.
Yeah.
Bevies in the house, blathered the night before the funeral.
Yeah.
The week. And I said to my cousin Jeanette, I said, I think I'm going to have to do something in this industry. And she was like, what? I went, you know, getting my mum ready, doing her makeup and, you know, the hair and making sure everything was right. I said, I think this is what I'm going to have to do. I said, I don't think I can go back to the beauty side of things.
Yeah.
And then obviously we all went into lockdown, didn't we, in the March. And that was hard.
Yeah.
Because Alfie absolutely lost the plot. My dad had a breakdown. And not a lot of people know that.
Yeah.
And then my dad used this strength. I was watching deteriorate. But then when he'd be in front of people, he was the laugh and soul of a party. And I'd say, why does everyone get the laugh on you? And I get the sad you.
Yeah.
And it was so, so hard.
Oh,
and then, I know. And he pulled himself out of it. And he still has good and bad days. But when I, you know, went back into the beauty industry, it was gone. It was a career that my mum had helped me with. She pushed me and she was always there because she was glam, as you know. And then obviously the funeral element of it, I was watching more and more people die around me, whether or not it was just because I'd gone through so much. And I'd heard about things at funerals or I'd attend them and I'd think, that was shit.
Yeah, that shouldn't have happened.
No.
That didn't need to happen.
No, and I said to my daddy, why don't we open a funeral home? And he went, piss off. And he went, you don't know nothing about it. And I was like, I'll learn about it.
Yeah.
I said, you've got to start somewhere, kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was back in like 2022.
And now look at what you've built.
Yeah.
And look at the families you're helping.
Yeah.
And the difference you're making.
Yeah. And I just said to him, I said, I'll start looking for premises. And I did. And we found the old Barclays Bank in the village. And I said to him, I said, we're going to go for this. I said, and if we get this building, it's meant to be. If we don't, we don't. And at the time, I was trying to get myself into being the medical side of things. So I actually applied to go and do my nursing access course to start uni in the following September.
Yeah.
So because I left school with nothing, I was a dickhead. Naughty girl. Kicked out. You know, it was what it was. But I worked since day one, so that's where the worth ethic has been instilled into me. Because of Alfie, you've seen what he's like.
Yeah.
He's hospitality, he's bubbly, you know. He's Alfie.
He's an entrepreneur, isn't he?
He is.
I think when you've got that hustle and you're watching it, it's what's in the cat's in the kit.
I want to be my dad.
Yeah.
So I did it all. I did a business plan, and not that any element of the business plan's being used now, because it was based on, you know, looking at big corporate firms.
Yeah.
And I said to my dad, right, I'll do my college course. I said, that's going to take a year. I said, and the bank we're going to get in a year if we get it, because Barclays still had like another year on the lease. That's why it became available after having it for so many years, because it was my bank when I was little with my mum and dad.
So pieces just come together, don't they, in this?
Yeah.
So you wait a whole year to get in there,
yeah,
which gives you time to learn your craft.
Yeah.
And I love what you've just said about your business plan. That's a big lesson for everyone in any walk of life, to be able to adjust it, to go, okay, well, that was my original. That's not going to work. And not be afraid to say, I'm going to change that. Yeah. I'm going to do that differently.
And even, I don't think I've used any element of the business plan, because I think the only thing that really gave me a structure was how much revenue the business was making year one, year two, and losses and stuff.
So it was useful in that sense.
It was useful in that sense. And
because, you know, what you're doing isn't normal. So you that was a normal business plan for an average
standard funeral home.
What you're doing is something
completely
very personal, very different.
Yeah.
And you've given it the Hayley Mack stamp of approval.
I have, yeah.
I just think this will have been a really interesting episode for people. And I said at the start, you'll laugh, you'll cry. There's so many different elements. But for you to share your personal story, I think is huge for you as a person.
Yeah.
I think it's a lovely little moment now that you can share with your dad. You can play him back this podcast and with your family who are so tight and so passionate.
Yeah.
And your mum's still such a big part of your day-to-day life.
She is. And this is the thing. And what you'll find as well is that with funeral care, when you've cared for someone's loved one, they feel drawn to get into this industry. And this is another thing. You can't get into it.
Mm.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
So with regards to that, you know, we have people, Hayley's at any jobs, and it's like, I got into a corporate firm because I was bubbly and I was on a point system in the interview and it weren't about my experience because I had none.
Yeah.
It was me going in, I researched the company, I researched the funeral industry, I told them what they wanted to hear, but I knew I was coming into it because I wanted to learn how to care for people.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is another element which comes with Butterflies now, which a lot of people don't know, and I said I'd launch it with you.
Oh, yes. This is the exclusive. I have loads of exclusives on this podcast.
Yeah,
I love it. Go on, give it to us.
So obviously we've got Tom, who's our care centre manager. He's our embalmer. Tom is like gorgeous. He's been doing it since he was 16. He's only 25.
Yeah.
And when he never used to get talked about in his old firm. And when he comes in with us, I go, you'll see Tom bobbing around, or I'll go and get him because I'll let you know who's caring for mum. Because the big thing with us is that the women care for the women, the men care for the men in terms of dressing. I think that's a big thing.
Yeah.
But what I do say is Tom is the one who does the care treatment. I've had what's called tradies come in and stuff and care for people with the embalming element. And I'm like, oh, Tom is the one to go to. Do you know what I mean? So I said to Tom, I said, look, I get messages left, right and centre of people wanting to become an embalmer. They want to become, you know, an FSO, which is a funeral service officer. No one can get into this industry unless you've got experience. I said to him, can you teach embalming? And he went, what do you mean? And I was like, can you teach people to embalm? And he's like, well, I have to go back and do another course. And I was like, okay, can we get you on that course? And he's like, why? I was like, I want an open an academy. And he was like, what? And I was like, I want to open an academy. And he was like, for what? I was like, I want to teach people to embalm. I said, I want to set up an academy for funeral service operators where people have to start at the back lane and work the way forward. That's usually how it works.
And will they do it through your clinic?
Yeah. Our care centre. So
the vision. You're going to have so many of these clinics all over the country and you're going to have trained everyone up so everyone's spot on.
Exactly.
And they're delivering exactly what you want them to deliver.
And it's the whole care centre element. You're not just put on a metal tray. You're not just lashed in the fridges and stuff like that. This is proper care from start to finish, meeting the family, showing, you know, the dignified care that they deserve. And we're being able to give people jobs in this industry. Yeah. That means something because no one can get into it.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fully CPD accredited. We're already accredited as a provider. The courses are going to be finalised by the end of this week. So that's all to be done. And we're going to be able to give so many more people in the community opportunities to move forward with something. And, you know, if that allows a lot more people to be able to open up their own funeral parlours in the future, then so be it. Yeah. Because, you know, when we opened up, we faced a lot of jealousy, you know, from locals, you know. It's got to the point now where I do funerals in Crochy and Nogsey and I'm like, weird again.
Creeping into other people's territories?
Yeah.
Oh, you're causing
and I call myself the Grim Reaper of Liverpool now, but everyone takes a joke from it. But that's a good thing because if we're seen as a team popular, you know, with the families, it shows
I love what you're doing. And you're paying it forward, opening this academy as well. So she's paying it forward. I'm going to pay it forward to you because the minute this ends, I've just thought of a couple of people you need to speak to and it's going to be marvellous. So follow her journey, and Butterflies Rising on Instagram. Show some love. Support our girl, Hayley Mack. Thanks, Hayley.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Subscribe now
via the iTunes Store.
Hear more from the Ladies of Liverpool
via ladiesofliverpool.com.
Huge thanks to our sponsors, Taskers. Check out all the furniture and their brand new looking store or head to taskersonline.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.